If you have a green thumb or have always wanted one, then get ready for Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, hosted by Ken Anderson, along with George Allman. Garden Talk aims to introduce new ideas, help solve problems, and keep you up to date on the latest developments in the nursery and landscaping industry. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson and George Allman.
Good morning, San Diego. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman and our special guest, John Clements, a local horticulturalist. We're going to be here for the next hour talking about all kinds of stuff going on in your yard and garden. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
The weather took an unexpectedly warm turn.
Well, maybe in the daytimes, but the evenings are nice and cool.
Evenings have been getting cool, but in the day, you know, we were at opening day yesterday at the track, and it was actually hot in Del Mar. I was surprised because I was expecting it to be cold and kind of dressed accordingly. And then we got there and it was like, wow, wasn't expecting this at all. So kind of a late season.
The clear sun on these days will really permeate your skin. It just seems like the intensity and the clarity of it are really what make you feel warm, I think. But this morning, so I got up, had coffee. It was 40 degrees when I got up at 6:30, and by 7, it went down to 39 degrees.
It was 45 at our place this morning.
Yeah, it's chilly.
So those colder nights. But you know what? We talked about this, John. It's November 1st.
It is.
Coming up. I mean, it's the first week of November.
Yeah.
And with that, we start accumulating chill for the fruit trees, which we can talk about another time, but we're starting to accumulate them. Today's the day.
Welcome to chill hours. I get so excited about chill hours.
Oh, I do too.
You got some last night then.
We did.
Because it's what, under 45?
Under 45 cumulative from 1 November to 1 March.
Yeah. Well, so we racked a few.
I got a few in there to get things rolling. Daylight savings time starts tonight, or actually tomorrow morning at 2 a.m. So be sure you set your clocks back. Daylight savings time ends. We go back to standard time.
Right.
Yeah, we go back to standard time. Couple of things coming up in Poway, or actually in both stores, on the 5th, Election Day, in San Diego, we are going to be doing inventory. And on the 6th, we're going to be doing inventory in Poway. So just be aware there's going to be a lot of people moving around the store, counting things. We are going to have a lot of people dedicated to that, but we also have enough staff to be dedicated to helping you out. So if you come in, we'll try to make any delays as little or non-existent as possible when we're trying to help you out. But both stores will be open for inventory on both days, so you can come in for that. Let's see. Then we can go on. We have classes coming up today, November 2nd at 9 o'clock. It's going to be Dragon Fruit Care and Culture with Alan Ridley. Have either of you met Alan before?
I have. He's our vendor.
Is he
up here,
our vendor?
He's taught two classes for us up in the Poway store as well.
Yeah, he's got a bunch of different varieties.
He does
too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of those ones I just can't get overly excited about.
I think that's probably because you may not have had some of the better quality varieties, because some of the like Makisupa and some of the others are quite tasty.
If you just get
the plain bland white one, I can understand going, yeah.
Well, like all those seeds too. They do have a lot of seeds in them.
Do you like kiwi?
No.
Okay, well, that explains a lot.
At a certain age, we enjoy the roughage.
Yeah. I mean, I can eat kiwi. I don't pick them out of salads but it's not a fruit that I go to in general. It's just, it's not high on my list of.
Got it.
Well, it is one type of plant. It's not a tree, fruit tree. It's a fruit cactus in a garden, but that's one people struggle with. They have a very difficult time getting production. And so it would be good for people to come out for that class. You've got to cross pollinate. I find that they must be pendulously hanging in order to really set fruit too. And people
really,
yes. If you look at the commercial growers, they have a center stalk, they make it go up, mm-hmm. and then they have it come off like
that's what we have out by the,
yeah, like the spokes
the
of a bicycle wheel. And then where they hang pendulously, that's where you're going to get your production. And most people fail because they never secure them properly.
That's interesting.
That's the first place to start.
That probably explains why the one that's been growing vertically on my fence in my side yard has never done anything except grow vertically on my fence.
Well, it also may need a pollinator.
It could. Yeah. Well, it hasn't bloomed at all. It hasn't even had any flowers.
Yeah, your blooms will be dramatically improved, too, if they will hang pendants.
If they hang out. That's interesting. Yeah. I didn't know that. Well, I guess I'll have to keep looking for a
I'll bring you some cuttings. I think I have 7 or 8 really good varieties.
They get big too.
They do.
The production ones are enormous.
They are
those umbrellas that they form. It's pretty incredible. It's a neat looking plant.
We'll have to have a segment on that.
Yeah.
Because we can talk a lot about those.
Sure. We could do that. Let's see, at 9:30 tomorrow in the Poway store, it's going to be fertilizers. We had a little bit of a change there. Our original rep from Dr. Earth that was going to come in is not going to be able to make it. So John has graciously stepped up to the plate to teach a fertilizer class for us instead. So it'll probably be a little bit broader than a Dr. Earth class, but it's going to be every bit as good. So John, thank you very much for stepping in and helping out.
Everything you ever wanted to know about fertilizer and didn't know who to ask.
And more.
Yeah, and more.
Let's see. What else do we have going on here? Next weekend, November 9th, in Poway, in San Diego at 9 o'clock, it's going to be fall fruit tree care with Tyler Trimble. Tyler teaches a very, very popular class. I would be sure to get there early to get a good seat. Always entertaining, always informative. Definitely worth going to see, especially if you have fruit trees in your yard and you need to know what to do for fall. At 9:30 next Saturday in Poway, it's going to be winter rose care, and James Flynn, our store manager up here, is going to be teaching that. And again, very entertaining, really knowledgeable guy. Should be a good show. So if you're looking for something to do, those are in the lineup. San Diego Botanical Garden Foundation. There's not much going on at Balboa Park in the month of November. I think people are kind of winding down. You have Thanksgiving holiday, and then everybody's got to get ready for December nights. So there's not much going on. However, this weekend, the 2nd and 3rd of November, there is a tropical fish show. So if you're in the park and you're looking for something to do, swing by the Casa del Prado and you can check out the tropical fish show. That's about all I've got for this part. Was trying to think. There was something else that we were going to talk about, and I didn't make a note of it.
Well, there are a number of things. We talked about doing fragrant plants.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
We've got a whole litany
we've
of things
all,
we can
we've
cover.
We've got all kinds of stuff to talk about.
But you were going to, you'd mentioned that you hit a bunch of farmers markets.
Oh, we did. We did. Yeah, we could. Yeah, we stopped and we hit one. We hit one big one in Palo Alto when we went up to visit our son, who's at Stanford up there. And it's the biggest farmer's market I've ever been to, the California Avenue Farmer's Market in downtown Palo Alto. I would say it's probably 5 or 6 blocks long with a couple of intersections tied into it, and it is absolutely packed. And the stuff that they have there is absolutely, the produce was amazing. But the one thing that popped that I saw that I even sent a picture of it to George because I had never seen one before was a tomopan persimmon. Have you ever seen that?
I have never seen one.
It's kind of round, but it has a like a flange on top.
Yeah,
of it.
Yeah, it looks like a persimmon that was girdled towards the top.
Yeah, yeah, it was a very, very interesting, very, very interesting plant. I was really surprised.
Did you purchase them?
No, I didn't because I didn't know. I would have been curious
flavor.
To the taste. They weren't quite ripe, and I just didn't. You know, we were leaving that afternoon to come back, so I didn't pick any up. But there was this one farmer there who had these enormous, absolutely enormous heads of broccoli and cauliflower that were absolutely perfect. I mean, just no blemishes on them at all. The cauliflower was snow white, $6 a pound for cauliflower and broccoli at the farmer's market. It's a little expensive.
Were they organic?
Yeah, I think everything at the farmer's market has to be organic.
And pristine.
Well, in some cases it is. There were a lot of fruit vendors there. We actually sampled a lot of pluots. There were a lot of pluots being grown. We bought quite a few, actually.
I love pluots.
Some really nice ones that we brought home.
They're just harvesting their pluots now. Mine are done.
There are some really late varieties you can get up in the valley.
But more chill hours up there.
Yeah. Oh, right. The chill hours are magnificent.
Because we have our low chill 3 or 4 that we can grow here.
Yeah.
Right.
Up there, there are dozens of varieties. Sure. And first time I ever had a red Fuji. Now, Fuji is a great apple, but red Fuji, I was at a farmer's market and tried some. And I actually ended up going to a farmer's place and getting some red Fuji to graft on my own apples because it was such a great.
I didn't know there was a red Fuji.
There is a red Fuji, and it's so sweet and crisp and beautiful. Watsonville is a tremendous apple growing area up there. So
one of the things that was really popular at the farmer's market that we were at, a lot of the vendors had Asian pears.
Oh yeah,
and they were just absolutely beautiful. I really like Asian pears. Oh, they don't have as bold a flavor as a regular pear does, but when they're ripe, the texture and the crispness.
Right.
That's one of the things I'm not a big fan about, like Verdanjoux pears, is they can be, when they get too ripe, they get mealy and soft and just not a good texture.
No.
But a very good flavor to them.
Well, for us, at least in San Diego area, also the Asian pears outperform the other pears tremendously.
They do.
And that, can I give you a little edible tip for the Asian pears?
Certainly.
Poach them in a little bit of red wine.
Oh.
First, poach them till they just begin to get soft and you get this beautiful red that infuses the flesh. I usually use a Merlot or a nice jammy cab. And then I make that into a salad with arugula, with the poached pear, and then a little bit of blue cheese or a good Stilton on top of that,
really,
and a vinaigrette.
Good.
Oh, man.
I will have to tell Melanie that.
Yeah, what a great way to use it.
Yeah, listen to the show. There we go. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. We're going to take a break. We're going to be back with more right after this.
There is more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson and George Allman.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and our guest horticulturalist, John Clements. Just before the break, I was mentioning that Melanie and I had taken a trip up to Northern California to Palo Alto to visit our son who's going to school up there. And a couple of things I will mention if you haven't gone to Northern California, go to Northern California and check it out. It's really pretty up there, and especially when you get out of the tangle that San Diego and Orange County and Los Angeles is, you get out to where there's some actual open space. It's really pretty, very, very pretty part of the state. I will say though, however, if you have the time to do it, take 101 north instead of 5. It's far more scenic. You go through Santa Barbara, Buellton, Santa Maria, San Luis Obispo, Gilroy, Salinas. You go through some lots. You get up north of Santa Barbara and it's almost all the agriculture is vineyards. It's vineyards as far as you can see.
Wow.
And then of course Gilroy is known for garlic.
That area is known for almonds too. It's one of the biggest almond growing areas in the state.
Lots of walnut orchards too, I noticed while we were up there. And then you get up outside of Gilroy and you're into Silicon Valley, which is just amazing on its own. Beautiful area. Towns of Palo Alto and Mountain View, really, really pretty. Our son is at Stanford, and so he was showing us around the campus there. I had no idea it was that big. It is, I think, 8,000 acres.
My goodness.
It's enormous. Mm. It is absolutely enormous. And he was telling us that because he went to UCSD as well, and he said they have half the students and 10 times the acreage
Wow.
at at Stanford up there. And huge swaths of the campus are covered in oak trees, sycamores, and what was the other one? Oh, redwoods.
And redwoods.
Redwoods all over the campus.
Yeah, the fighting redwoods.
Yeah, you know? just absolutely, absolutely beautiful. And then the main drive to the main, they call it the Oval, in the center of campus, is called Palm Avenue, and it's lined with these enormous Canary Island date palms, which it doesn't appear that the weevil has gotten that far north yet, because I didn't see any damage to any of the palm trees while we were up there. But a beautiful place. And downtown Palo Alto, really neat little town. They have one of the main street through downtown is closed off, so it's walkable. Same thing over in Mountain View. They have a big chunk of the main street in downtown closed off for pedestrian traffic, and like lots of little shops and restaurants and bars, and just a really, really neat place. And then we went out to Google over in Mountain View, and oh my word, they have way too much money. The building where their visitor center is it's called the Carousel Building, and it's a suspension building of some kind. It's insane. It's absolutely insane. So if you're up there looking for something to do, just drive around there.
It shows you where the money is, Ken. I mean, when you think about Google and their facility and the spheres up in Seattle that Jeff Bezos has, that's like a giant bubble of tropical plants. I mean, if you haven't been to the spheres.
No, I haven't been up there. I'll have to check that out.
It's insane. Yeah. So it just goes to show. In fact, Matt Zuckerberg's yacht right now is down at the Broadway Pier.
Yeah, it's been
and
there for a while.
You just look at these guys in tech and you realize they have way too much money.
Well, it's interesting. There's one, if anybody has any interest in electronics at all, you can go to 391 San Antonio Road in downtown Mountain View, and there's a plaque on the wall of the building there. And that was 391 San Antonio Road was the original site of Shockley Semiconductors after Shockley left Bell Labs. Mm. And in 1956, he opened up his own lab at 391 San Antonio Road. And there's a big plaque on the wall. Every semiconductor company in the United States can trace its origin to that location. Wow. And they have it all mapped out on the wall in a flow chart. It's pretty neat. It's pretty impressive.
I want to go back to you going down and seeing oaks, redwoods, and Canary Island palms. And you said that you didn't see any weevils or any damage. How about oak gall? Did you see any galls?
Notice any. And all the oaks were in beautiful condition. I mean, they didn't have any brown foliage on them at all. And some of these oak trees were massive. I mean, 3-4 foot diameter trunks on them. I mean, really, really big ones there. And there's a huge arboretum on campus too. Mm-hmm. And that's mostly what it is. They also have a stock farm where they grow a lot of different crops and livestock.
Is it for research or for the labs?
I think it's for
school.
I think it's for research.
You know, a little trick that's going on now too. If you want to start oaks, the best way to do them, you know, if we always say, George, I know you and I hold this opinion and every good arborist I know holds this opinion. Start with the smallest tree that you can plant. If I could, I'd get my trees in 1 gallons, 5 gallon, okay, 15 if I must, 24, 36, 48, oh my goodness, no. But it's better to even start with an acorn. And all over town, any place that there's Quercus agrifolia, you can go out and collect acorns and start your own
oak trees. Oh, they're all over the place.
They're all over the place right now. The other little trick I do with those is you can put them in a big bucket, wait for the grubs to come into the acorns and use them for trout bait. Trout lose their minds over these little grubs that get inside the acorns.
Really?
Yeah.
It's so a now really which trout. Which acorns
tell,
are those?
I'll have to tell my son that.
Oh, agrifolia or up in the mountains, Kellogg eye.
What are those for the people that aren't into the Latin?
Oh, the coast live oaks and also the deciduous oaks out in the mountains. They'll get grubs in them.
That was the other thing that they had up there that you don't see as much down here was deciduous oaks, the big wide leaf.
Yeah,
the wide leaf oaks
and a lot of valley oaks up there too.
Yeah, it's very pretty. But you know, it's interesting when you talk about growing oak trees from acorns. When you go out into the mountains around here, where we have a lot of oak trees, and you walk around, you don't see a lot of oak tree seedlings growing around the trees. So I don't know if they just choke themselves, if they choke them out on their own or what, but you don't see a lot of little oak trees. Yeah. You see lots of big ones, but you don't see a lot of little ones.
You do see the occasional. I do see them when I'm out there, but you're right. You won't see a mass of them under a tree. Like you might say Colorataria or something.
Or hundreds of them. Or Mexican fan palm.
Yeah. Well, what I will do on my property, if I see manzanitas or oaks that look particularly promising, or even pines, I'll actually wrap a wire fence around them to just protect them from the deer and other things, because I want to have that in situ plant that's actually established itself from a seed that will be so far superior,
much better
than anything you could ever plant.
Indeed,
because that plant is happy in that spot. You know, and thinking about all the deciduous trees that you mentioned, all those beautiful fruit trees, the almonds and the pluots and things. I was at the Point Loma store and I was checking out the nursery here. You know, the stuff that got potted up this year after bare root season, folks, run to the nursery. 50% off right now, everything that's potted up. So take them all
for deciduous fruit trees.
Not the avocados, right. Not the citrus, but deciduous fruit trees, 50% off. And also 50% off on the sleeved things, like the grapes that are out there. There were some Syrah grapes. I saw some amazing things, and you know something? I love a bargain. So get out to the nursery and buy these things at half off.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was talking to Adams about it today, he's the one here in the Poway store that did the fruit tree order for next year. And, we've cut back on wine grapes this year. For some reason, wine grapes were not popular this year. So I don't know what the change was, but people shifted away from wine grapes. Maybe they just like something that they can harvest and throw on the table and have a little more flavor to it than not that a wine grape is bad.
I was going to
say,
you know, I have some Cab Sav growing at my other house, and I love just eating them.
I'll eat them straight from the plant too.
Every day.
Champagne grapes, if you can find them too. The little small champagne grapes. Champagne. Oh my goodness. They're so fabulous and great in a salad. Am I talking about food again?
Champagne grapes.
And it's not champagne as in...
Well, champagne's the region.
Champagne this region. Yeah. But there is a variety called champagne grape you can buy.
It's much smaller.
Very tiny.
It's like the... is it Perlet, the little smaller one?
Even smaller than a Perlet.
Okay, got it.
But they're delicious.
Yep.
Interesting. Yeah. What was the one that my grandparents used to grow grapes? It was a small green one.
Oh, and probably Perlet.
It wasn't Perlet. Oh gosh, now it's gonna drive me crazy. I'm gonna have to look that up. But it produced far more than we could ever, as a family, could ever eat. My parents always brought them home. My grandmother always had them available at the house when they were in season, and they had just a couple of vines growing on their backyard in Bay Park, and it grew tremendously. Tremendously well. I will look that up during the I will look that up during the break.
There's some other varieties. You know, the varieties that people typically think of as table grapes don't do well for almost all of San Diego, unless you're way east and it's hot. You know, things like the Thompson Seedless or the Red Globe, they do not do well for us. But Concord does great. There's a variety called Ventura grape that is fabulous on the coast. Perlet's another one. So
Flame does really well. I've had great success with Flame in two locations,
in Poway
and in Rancho Penasquitos.
No, there's a native grape too that I've seen that Moosa Creek grows, but I don't know what the quality of the fruit is like on that.
Yes, Vitis californica.
Oh, yeah. Well, that explains it.
Yeah. and it does get fruit, and I've eaten the fruit from it. It's okay. It's not spectacular.
Not great, but it's okay.
But it gets great fall color.
It's a beautiful,
gorgeous. Those leaves turn red in the fall, it's stunning.
Oh, I'll have to check that out.
So sometimes people forget that grapes end up being a really terrific plant for good fall color in our area.
Yeah, they do. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. We're going to take a break, and we're going to be back with more right after this.
There is more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson and George Allman.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson with George Allman and our special guest, John Clements. Before the break, you had mentioned oak gall
I was curious if you had noticed any.
Yeah, I had not. I have not seen any up there.
But we left it hanging as to what is oak gall.
Yeah.
And so I thought we should come back and talk about that a little bit. So it's an abnormal growth on oak trees. And mm-hmm. other plants get it as well. But oaks are actually get something that looks like a fruit. And they call it like an oak apple mm-hmm. or an oak gall.
Yeah, I've seen it around.
And it's just an abnormal growth that's produced or developed because of an insect.
It's a wasp, I think, isn't it?
For the oak, it's a wasp. Yeah. Other ones, aphids do it, and some mites may do it on other trees, but you see it on oaks in particular with looks like fruit forming on the leaves. It's kind of odd, mm-hmm. and among other things. So do you treat it, John?
No, it's a naturally occurring thing. And actually, I think it's an oddity that really makes it far more interesting.
I was going to say that. I think it's kind of unique, and it's fun to look at.
Yeah. Come to think of it, I think I have noticed that in the oak trees in Rancho Peñasquitos Canyon on the trail mm-hmm. down to the waterfall.
Sure.
I think you can find it on those trees down there. That's another place where there's a lot of oak trees, isn't that?
Oh, we just hiked that a couple waterway. Weeks ago. Yeah.
Yeah. There's somewhere down there about halfway between, I think it's about halfway between the old ranch house and the waterfall. There's actually a grave.
And yes, there is.
And it's
on the
fenced
south
off.
Side.
Yeah. And it's fenced off under the oak trees. And Melanie and I went over, we found it, and we were standing there looking at it. And it's kind of under the canopy of the trees. It's a very, very pretty place. And there was something on the other side of the water that was moving through the brush. I don't know what it was, but it sounded bigger than a human being. Wow. And you could hear the branches and the brush crunching underneath of it as it was moving. And we couldn't see it. And I told Melanie, I said, we need to go.
So do you think it was like a mountain lion, a deer, or a ghost, since you were at a gravesite? I have seen.
The reason why we left is because I thought it could have been a mountain lion. And mm-hmm. I have friends that lived in Peñasquitos that had spotted mountain lions around the Horseman's Park area. So they are in that valley.
They're in that corridor.
Yeah. So it may very well have been a deer.
I've seen a lot of mule deer down in there when I've ridden my mountain bike through there.
Yeah, but it was enough to make me take a precaution to get out of there. But that's a fantastic hike.
That's beautiful.
Especially when there's after a rain.
And you know what's interesting is Capri and I just did it recently. Was I was surprised at how much water is still in there.
Oh yeah.
You know it was.
There's always water.
We did it in the early part of October, I think. There always is, but as you get. You know, further through the summer and there's less rain and precipitation in the mountains, it's usually less.
It was
a full.
Yeah. You
creek.
Just don't think about that in San Diego or Southern California for that matter. The other one that had quite a bit of water flowing through it, although they had closed it off for a while, was up in Elfin Forest, up kind of south, I guess it's south of San Marcos.
Is that Escondido Creek?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. We hiked that a few years ago, and there was a lot of water going through there year round. They closed it for a while, and it was to prevent. I can't remember if it was to prevent some disease from spreading through. Might have been, I don't remember, but they closed it for a while. But it may be reopened now.
The oak gall is certainly not a problem, but one of the things people that. They really need to be mindful of is to not move firewood around from place to place, because there is a pest that is unfortunately decimating local oaks, the golden oak shot hole borer. And mm-hmm. that is something I would treat. If I have a magnificent oak on a property, I would definitely treat, and you can use systemics, and you'd need an arborist that's qualified to do this. But if you've got beautiful oaks on your property, you could lose them to the golden oak shot hole borer. So that would be something I would treat.
Yeah, I think I mentioned it on the show a while back when we were back in Austin visiting some friends. They live in the hill country, and their property was covered with oak trees. And back there, I don't know if it's a Phytophthora or what, but there is a fungus that is killing oak trees in the hill country in Texas like crazy. And we pulled up to their house, and we looked around the property, and there's beer kegs laying all over their property. And I don't remember that the last time we were here, and the beer kegs were full of fungicide, and they were injecting it into the oak trees.
Wow.
And some people, some of their neighbors had lost all of their mature oak trees to
that's
it.
A
and,
shame.
And apparently it spreads through the root system. Mm-hmm. And what people were doing is you could hire a trenching company to come in and cut a 10-foot deep trench all the way. How you do that without cutting through your sewer line and your water line, I don't know. Wow. But cut like a 10-foot deep trench all around your property, and it severs the root systems from your neighbor's oak trees and helps prevent the spread of the pathogen. Wow. But it was a big problem.
Same issue up at Central Coast, where the sudden oak death, which is a type of Phytophthora, I think it's Phytophthora remorum, if I remember correctly.
I think you're right.
And that really travels via water. So it can spread as water flows. It just moves with the water, which is a scary prospect because we all need water and the trees need water.
And the trees need water, right?
Well, you know, talking about water and the spread of pathogens, I was just reading an article the other day about Hurricane Helene and what was it? Was it Milton? What was the other big hurricane that just went through back? I think it was Milton.
I think so, because it didn't sound very threatening.
No. But they said that a lot of the citrus orchards they have to be really careful now that they've been saturated and there was standing water in the orchards, and it just opens the door for Phytophthora and several other diseases that they were very concerned about. That on top of having all of your structures to keep the psyllids off of your trees ripped away. Those hurricanes had a big impact on the citrus industry in the Southeast,
which has already been reeling from HLB.
They got an extra dose of it back there, unfortunately with that. Going back again, before the break, we were talking about grapes and the grapes that my grandparents grew, and I actually went and looked it up, and it was Himrod, which is it's not a big grape. I don't think they get any bigger than a dime.
No, they're small.
It's a relatively small grape, excellent flavor, seedless, I believe too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And especially I know in Bay Park, they produced like crazy, just pounds and pounds of big bunches of grapes. So if you're looking for a nice, easy to grow, and my grandparents never pruned it, they just let it go. So it was all over the place.
Yeah. It's a pretty one. It turns like a yellow when it's fully ripe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's
very golden looking.
Yes.
Too.
Yeah. So it's attractive just as a plant, even if you never harvest it. It's a good looking plant for a trellis.
I actually planted, speaking of gold, planted a couple of golden muscats along my back fence when I put the house in. And they don't produce well now. There's so much other stuff growing on them. You have to look to find them, but they still produce, and they produce huge grapes. Right, they're about the size of a quarter, nice and golden when they're ripe. Very sweet, very very sweet.
I love Moscato.
It's got to be cold. It is really good. The biggest drawback we have to is they have seeds in them. So it doesn't make a great table grape, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So anyway, when they do produce, the birds definitely enjoy them. We see them out there pecking away at them.
I've never been bothered by grape seeds. I just eat
the whole thing.
I eat the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like a pomegranate or maybe a kiwi, you know?
Well, yeah, I wouldn't know about the kiwi thing. As we are getting into fall, it is also time to start taking a look at what you're going to do with your lawn. I know my Bermuda lawn in the backyard has started to go dormant. The weeds in it are all still green. So that may be a good time to try to get out there and get rid of the stuff that's not Bermuda in it. My front lawn isn't Bermuda. I don't know. I actually don't know what it is, but it stays evergreen all year round. But for people that
a fescue.
A fescue. It was 27 years ago. Okay. It's not anymore. Mm. I don't know what it is now. It almost looks like a cuyu.
Interesting.
It's kind of a running grass like that. But for those of you that have lawns that go dormant, now is the time to start thinking about overseeding your lawn. A lot of the golf courses do that. Down the fairways as the lawns go dormant, you can put annual ryegrass down, which will germinate in
an hour.
I was gonna say a couple hours.
Yeah, usually within less than a week with annual
so
rye.
Fast,
it grows really fast, and it'll fill in your lawn, and you'll have a absolutely beautiful, lush green lawn until it starts to warm up again.
Yeah, until about March or so.
Yeah.
You know, a thing I always liked about annual rye when you're overseeding a typical, like a Claremont Bermuda lawn like I had, is that it's a lighter green. And in the winter, when there's diminished light, it was very, very, it was like effervescent. It kind of has this glow to it that's beautiful.
It's really pretty.
And I actually enjoyed the winter lawn more than the summer lawn when I had a lawn at a house. And, you know, it's terrific. Plus, this is the time, if you've had spots in your lawn, maybe your sprinklers don't cover so well, this is the time to tackle that. Get the sprinklers fixed so that you get head-to-head coverage. And then this is the time of year. November is the best month of the whole year to overseed. If you've got a fescue lawn, overseed with fescue seed, steer manure, and it'll bounce back and look great.
Yeah, yeah. A fescue lawn is, I've always liked the fescue the best because it's green all year round, mm-hmm. and it's nice to run on barefoot. It's great to lay on. It's just a beautiful lawn. I know that it's a little bit more water intensive than, say, a Bermuda, mm-hmm. but the fescue doesn't get into everything.
Yeah.
You know, and it doesn't end up in your flower beds, your fruit trees, and everything.
Well, most people find, at least in San Diego, you will end up with a Bermuda lawn, whether you like
Absolutely
it or not.
Absolutely true.
And so there are ways that you can do with that. I know some people don't like chemicals, but if you want to retain that fescue lawn or the bluegrass lawn or that mixed blended lawn, there's a product called Turf Lawn Ester.
Big fan.
That you can spray over the top. It won't hurt your cool season lawn, but it'll kill off the Bermuda.
Yep. Yeah.
And all broadleaf weeds and
the broadleaf
else.
Weeds.
Yeah. Just about everything too. Else.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great product.
You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to be back with more right after this.
There is more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson and George Allman.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clementson. We are talking about lawns and things to be watching out for. This time of the year, if you have a lawn that goes dormant, it's typically going to be one of the running type grasses. In this area, it's usually Bermuda grass, or sometimes you'll see people that still have St. Augustine. Mm-hmm. Both of those grasses over the years will develop thatch, which is an undergrowth. Some of it's dead, some of it's still alive, but it's a thick mat that grows underneath the plant. It can cause water difficulties watering. It just takes up a lot of space and doesn't leave a lot of room for new growth on them. You can dethatch during the wintertime. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of ways you can get a power dethatcher to do it. Or if you're just a masochist, you can get a dethatching rake.
It's good exercise.
I was going to go with the exercise angle,
it's a lot like work, dragging a dethatch, especially through a heavily thatched lawn. But it does make a big difference in it, and it allows new growth. And the lawn, when the weather warms up, it'll bounce back very quickly. And John, you said in the wintertime, you usually aerate.
Yeah, I aerate twice a year. So I will aerate in the fall and then again in spring. Mm-hmm. And you want to aerate and thatch, of course, before you do any overseeding that you would want to do. And I would also do that prior to fertilization. And most people think in the wintertime, you don't need to fertilize. And that's actually not the truth. You need to fertilize. I still fertilize in winter, but maybe rather than about a 4-week cycle, I switch to maybe a 6-week cycle. But one important thing, winter lawn versus summer lawn. Summer lawn, you can use a fertilizer like a 16-6-8. Turf Supreme is probably my favorite. But what happens is that the bacteria in the soil that's extant in the biome breaks down that nitrogen into a nitrate form that can then be utilized by the lawn. And when it gets cool, those bacteria get sleepy and mm-hmm. they go dormant. And so you need to switch. Typically, I would switch November 1st to a cool season fertilizer. And you can find cool season fertilizers at a good nursery or at the Home Depot. You want to go with like a Bandini's all season fertilizer or Turf Royale. There are other formulations, but it has a split nitrogen ion out of the bag so that it's ready to be utilized. It's already in that nitrate form. And so you'll find that your lawn will look so much better if you're fertilizing, even in the wintertime.
Yeah.
But switch fertilizers.
Yeah. I know some of the aerating companies around San Diego, you know, I don't I don't hear about them much anymore, but they're
fewer
used to be
and fewer lawns. Fewer.
That's probably, yeah, there's the driveway.
Well, that's
right there.
Probably yep. it right there. Yep. But after they would aerate, they would put pelletized gypsum down
and gypsum.
Too. Yeah. To help keep the soil loose,
right.
And better draining.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and add calcium
So if, like I said, if you have a lawn, these are things to consider this time of the year.
And by the way, I just want to say, no lawn shaming here. Our climate really is not the best for lawns, but a little bit of lawn, or if you have a six-year-old, I had four kids and I've got like 15 grandkids. They want a little lawn to play on.
Yeah.
And it's not the end of the world. It is not the unforgivable sin, may I say, to have a very beautiful, healthy lawn.
I have always felt that way.
And I as well. And I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny when it kind of reminds me of the conversation we had on a previous show about California natives. And there's a big push right now to plant California natives. I hear the advertisements for it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And they keep talking about how the natives are water wise, but
not always.
Of them.
We had a great discussion last time about that.
So, yep. But that after that discussion, I hear that commercial on the radio now very mm-hmm. frequently. And they're, I'm pretty sure it's the state is pushing natives, which I have no issue with natives, but they're not all drought tolerant.
They're pushing natives big time. There's actually pending now, whether this will come to fruition or not, there is a proposal that in the county of San Diego, some localities are already doing this. City of Encinitas, they're talking about mandating that people need to put native plants in their home landscaping, which I'm sorry, can I say, I'm a liberal libertarian. So I do not like the government telling me every single thing I must do or what I cannot do. And I think that would be horrible for both the landscape industry, for the green industry. There's not even enough supply
for
to
the
have,
aesthetics.
You know, the aesthetics. There's nothing wrong with some very judiciously placed Australian, South African plants. And by the way, make sure that, you know, the native stuff can be augmented and be made beautiful by all these other very mm-hmm. drought tolerant plants. So like you were saying, Ken, not every native is drought tolerant. Sometimes a choice from Western Australia or South Africa is a better choice than some natives. And so I think it's too easy to generalize and say all natives are good, everything else is bad.
I agree. If the goal of your landscape is to use less water, there are a lot of options out there, and not all of them are from California. There, mm-hmm. there's some very, like you said, South African, Australian plants as well. The other thing that I think some people forget is it doesn't matter what you plant, you've got to water it to get it established.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you really do. The other thing with some of the California natives that you might want to be aware of too, is that some of them tend to burn. Mm-hmm. And if you live in a fire area, you may want to reduce or at least judiciously plant those plants so that they are not, not that close to your house.
What I was going to say was the other thing that, you know, you talk about, if you're trying to make your yard use less water, you can still put plants that are a more water dependent plant mm-hmm. with a lot of mulch
mm-hmm.
and you still can water once a week.
Yeah. Or hydrozone your yard so that you have, maybe you can indulge slightly and have
over
one
here,
area where I've got, you know, higher water use plants, whereas maybe 80% of the yard is very, very low. You know, that this is the beauty of designing a landscape so that you can hydrozone, you can make it interesting. It's kind of difficult too to find shade plants that are natives that are going to do well, or dry shade. That is a very difficult plant biome to install plants into. And so you just have to be creative and, you know, one size does not fit all.
That is true. When we were talking about lawns, I found an interesting article about how consumers think about lawn fertilizers, marketing company went through and did this. And for those of you that didn't realize it, we record the show from our Poway store now. So if you heard that in the background, that was just the daily operation of the show. 70% are concerned or highly concerned about lawn fertilizers polluting lakes, streams, and rivers. 61.5% are concerned about application of lawn fertilizers and pesticides in nearby parks, sports fields, and golf courses. And 59.9% remember seeing lawn signs warning people and animals to stay off treated turf for 24 hours. Usually the treated turf is going to be a pesticide. I don't think I've ever seen or heard of any warnings for people staying off of a lawn when it's just been just a fertilizer. Mm-hmm.
If it was sometimes fungicides, you will find there are a few where they will
there's a reentry period.
Reentry period.
Yeah. And then they said when asked why they think what natural or organic fertilizers contain make them safer, 51% cite plant and animal nutrient sources such as soybean meal. 50.5 cite ingredients like those included in pet food and livestock feeds. 43.7 cite natural mineral sources. 60% prefer fertilizers made from pet animal feed ingredients versus 35% for manure-based ingredients versus 4.2 for petrochemical ingredients. That's really low for petrochemical.
Mm-hmm.
But that is interesting. There are sources for lawns basically need mostly nitrogen. Mm-hmm. That's what they grow the best off of. Mm-hmm. So there are sources of nitrogen out there that you can use on a lawn if you're concerned about it. Although I'm kind of one of those people that think if you use the product judiciously and carefully, you're not going to have any big issues with it. I think it's phosphate. I think is one of the big things that they have been concerned about environmentally lately.
Well, and phosphates persist for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
And you know, nitrogen, especially most sources that we're using, they are used up almost immediately. Sulfate of ammonia is water soluble. I mean, it is, you literally put that on, hit water, and it's almost gone.
Yeah.
Phosphates can be problematic. The other thing is, you know, if you're fertilizing your lawn, make sure you get, it's not always bad to use a leaf blower, by the way, as a person who is in commercial landscaping. It's so much more efficient and quick than using a broom. Well, blow all of the little prills back onto the lawn. Make sure that it's not on the sidewalk or in the gutter. Make sure everything blows back on so you're minimizing any runoff. And also, don't water your lawn to the point of runoff.
Yeah. That's
my
the big
golly.
One.
You know, I see sometimes somebody's watering for half an hour and the water's just running off like a creek. Can I give a little commercial landscape secret here?
Pretty quick.
Break up your water cycle on your irrigation timer. Water for 3 or 4 minutes till you just get before the point of runoff. Wait 30 minutes, do it again, and maybe 5 minutes, 6 minutes, and then maybe do it one more time instead of one 18-minute cycle.
Yeah.
Break it up into three cycles and allow that to perk down nicely into the lawn.
Yeah, that's what I've done at my house, and it's dramatically reduced the amount of water runoff that I had had.
Well, and it's not just that the runoff is going to carry away your pesticides, fungicides, and fertilizer. You're wasting a ton of water that's not getting down into the roots.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman and John Clements. We'll be back next week with another hour of Garden Talk. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thank you for joining us on Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, your source for gardening, landscaping, and horticultural news. Still have a question for the Garden Talk crew, or want to learn more about the show or how to become a guest or sponsor? Send an email to gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com. That's gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com. That's gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com. Or visit walteranderson.com. There's more professional gardening advice next week at the same time on Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery.